Good evening, and welcome to Talk Truth Radio with your host, Dr. Rayne Morgan. Dr. Rayne Morgan is Mother Earth, and you can look forward to the next 3 hours of enlightening talk. What are the issues? More importantly, what are the solutions? We hold the torch. Together we stand. Now join Dr. Rayne and this evening's guests. Open your mind and have a good time.
Hey, good evening. Welcome one more time to Talk Truth Radio. I'm your host. I'm Dr. Rayne Morgan. And want to remind you just at the start of the show, just so you know, that Dr. Sandra Rose Michael is the sponsor. And we do lots of stuff. Listen for upcoming shows. She'll be back on. We do lots and lots of stuff about bioscalar energy and how she travels around the world, healing the good folks with the scalar energy. So if you want information on bioscalar technology, please visit eesystem.com. Okay, and we also want to say thank you to the Fate Magazine folks. We love them. Go to fatemag.com. Fate Magazine is the oldest paranormal publication out there. And, you know, they tell the stories from those people that have the experiences. So, Fate Magazine, fatemag.com. And we always want to thank Phyllis Galdi of Galdi Press. She gives us a wonderful ad in her magazine every month and says, hey, yay, go talktruthradio.bbs.com, bbsradio.com. So thank you to Phyllis Galdi and Fate Magazine. Now, one of the other people that you people who listen to me often hear me talk about and say thank you to for just creating one of the most wonderful products on this earth is Utadi Oils, Essential Oils, Utadi. And you hear me talk about the finest essential oil in the world. And I want to give you all a very special show tonight, a treat, because we have Ra'ed Roddy of Utadi Oils himself on our show with us this evening. Good evening, Ra'ed. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Dr. Rayne. Good evening. Thank you for having me with you tonight.
Thank you. You honor me for coming on.
Thank you.
I think the first thing that we need to talk about, Ra'ed, is you. I know that you have several degrees in what we think of as mainstream subjects, business and marketing and that sort of thing. And so we know that the way you have set your business up to work and the way it is marketed around the world is a success. We know that because that's what you're trained in. But there's more to the story than just a business degree. As a small child, you grew up in the world of essential oils. And before I ask you to tell us a little bit more about that, I want to say that here's the one thing that I know about fine essential oils, and that is that the essential oil is the spirit of the plant. It's the intelligence of whatever it is that grows up that we make an essential oil from. It truly is the spirit of that plant or bark or tree or seed or nut or what the heck ever. So I'd like you to tell us how you grew up, how you know what you do, and I want you to talk about the spirit of the flower.
Okay. Well, I was born actually in the south of Egypt, in Luxor, that was the capital of the old Pharaonic Egypt. I come from a Coptic family. We're the, we have our lineage back to the Pharaonic times. And the people there are still connected with the history, connected with through the let us say the transmission of that knowledge from one generation to the next. So there are still people that carry the knowledge that the old priesthood in Egypt, that were really the teachers in what they called the life schools or schools of life, where doctors or pharmacists were of that time, of course, were trained. Of course, every farmer in Egypt, because people there, it's a very old culture, so many thousands of years, and it's serene and full of that wisdom and so on. So people really kept quite the relationship with the old traditions and so on in their lives. There is always that relationship between humans and nature, humans and the soil, human, and what the body needs for health and so on, and how nature already has the solution and the answer for us. So modernization really came slowly, and of course there would be always the tendency for young people, including myself, to like look for whatever is modern, whatever we declare so scientific. But then the more we grow up, we discover that also the experience, the know-how, the lessons that stood the test of time are even more valuable than just jumping to new sciences that sometimes are negated by newer discoveries and so on.
Right.
Lessons sometimes that have been there for like a couple of thousand years. A certain plant, for instance, you use to drink as a tea, and you feel very relaxed and so on. It has been tried for several generations, and it has been proven such effects. Now, really modern science is starting to think about really life and how it evolved and how it got here. And modern science is really helping us to understand how, through the discovery, for instance, of the DNA and through the discovery of those molecules produced in nature, how all that really affects life and affects the development of life of and also the effects of the plants on us humans. So my private journey was, yes, I grew up in a family that is in business and related in the business with the medicinal herbs, the essential oils, and so on for so many generations. And now we are adapting with the modern science and so on. But thank goodness we are very, very keen on keeping all those historical lessons that we have tested ourselves and seen how powerful, how successful they have been. And that was really what was guiding me personally, my family, and our associates in the business, our farmers, in our journey. And our journey is simple. It's like we have tested those lessons of love, of healing, the powers of nature really communicating with our human body and giving us a lot of good things. And people there are just sharing with the world their discovery.
Rod, talk about how oils are made.
Okay. Well, we have, there is the part that is like technical part, and that technical part is simply exposing the plant materials after being harvested and prepared in certain ways. And each one of the natural plants has its own rules, as we would put it, for preparation. Like certain leaves could either be processed green or dried, then we crush them, for instance. And the way we do things is simply by having a boiler that contains water that would have that would be exposed to a lot of heat, so that this water would evaporate and become steam. And that steam is directed to pass through the plants. When those plants are heated, usually those pockets of essential oils start to evaporate. And when they evaporate, they join the water steam. So that steam that evaporates within a large container, usually metal, that we call the vat, that steam going up, and we collect that and let it pass through a condenser, which is another container where we would use cold water, coils of cold water around that pipe in which the steam passes through. That immediately condenses that steam. And, of course, everybody knows that oil and water never mix. Even though essential oil is not fat, it's a kind of their own, but usually they are, most of the time, lighter than water. So we collect the fluid that comes from that condenser, and immediately the essential oil floats up and the water goes down. So we have a certain way, a certain kind of a flask that we call the Venetian flask, which is a device that allows the water to separate from the essential oil. The oil goes out and separates from the water, and this is how essential oils are made. But this is like the simplest diagram that we can talk about. This is for a lot of types. There are several other ways of extracting the oils. And there are some technicalities here, but to make things simple, I can give you some other examples. Like, for instance, there is usually the peels of the citrus fruits, like the orange, the mandarin, the grapefruit, the lime, the lemon. Usually we do not expose them, except there are some countries and some distillers that do that, only when they dehydrate and dry the appeals. But in most of the situations, we use a process that is called cold press, which is manual. And let me remind you of that of the situation when we, as kids, would squeeze a lemon or an orange peel in front of a candle, and it would make the flame
flare out.
Exactly.
Yes.
So that shows you that the essential oil in those citrus fruits is readily available. It's just waiting to be pumped out. So we use a manual way to press those peels and absorb, suck the essential oil from them, the orange and all these other ones. So this is another method. And there are other methods too, one that we call the enfleurage, which was actually the first method that was created by the Egyptian priesthood, and it is still unreplaced until today. They use that in the temple, usually by mixing and whipping the fat of the geese, duck, and the lamb. And that fat, they would layer it on top of a table that has a slab of marble. And usually, they would put the petals of flowers, okay, on top of the fat. And that was actually the first method and the greatest method for applying their belief that this is like transferring the spirit of the plant, because they discovered that those flowers, especially for Egypt, the lotus flower,
yes,
and the jasmine and so on, were really exuding their spirit that contains the nice fragrance and the healing effects and so on to that fat. And those who look at those Egyptian scenes on the Egyptian papyri or on pictures of the different stones or walls of the temples, they would see sometimes the dancers or women sitting, and on their head there was a kind of a cone. That cone was exactly those fat, okay, and they would put the fat on the top of their head. Now this fat is totally containing the oil of the flower petals, and because of the heat and the dryness of the weather there, that fat melts and it would nourish the hair and protect it, and even the skin of the women. Okay? But also in the temple, that fat was used for other purposes, sometimes for medicinal purposes, and some other times for spiritual purposes.
That's amazing. That cone-shaped thing that you see on the glyphs,
yes,
the pictures, that was actually
the origins of what we call today cosmetics, aromatherapy, fragrance, all these things combined, because
they wore it on their head.
Yes. Yes.
That's amazing. Riad, I know that some of the oils, they're very rare. I know that you make a lotus that for a very small dram tester bottle is more than $500. Why is such an oil so costly?
Well, okay. It goes to the history of the Egyptian mythology, the Egyptian religion. In Egypt, there was an abundance of the rose, lotus flowers, because it used to symbolize a lot of things. It used to symbolize the mental ability and the divine connection between the king and the gods, because actually when that king was ruling Egypt, he ruled as the son of God. Okay, the issue of the lotus and the way it grows and the amounts of essential oil that exist in those petals, the economics of that are so mind-boggling. But let me give you, in the past few years, there were lots of discoveries that have been discussed and even published, especially in England and Germany, about the role of the blue lotus in Egypt and its role medicinally, spiritually, and so on. But the reason for the blue lotus to be so expensive is that it has almost totally disappeared from the face of this planet. Lotus now, in all its amounts, exists in very tiny spots, some in India, some in Egypt, some in a few other countries in Asia, especially China, Philippines, and so on. But the only type that grows in abundance is the white lotus. And to tell you the truth, the white lotus is a wonderful, wonderful essential oil with incredible fragrance, with a chemical structure that is so incredible, so powerful. It has effects on the human nervous system, very supportive, and so on. But then there is another variety of the lotus that usually is pink. And the pink is even rarer than the white. Okay, so if you have 20 kilograms of the lotus petals from the white lotus variety, you would only find 1 kilogram of the pink. So the ratio is 20 to 1. Okay? You can find 20 flowers of the white lotus and only 1 of the pink. But then the blue lotus so disappeared that only very, very tiny spots in 3 places in the world that I don't I don't have to mention here because these are my sources.
Sure, of course.
But anyway, the amount that is produced would not allow the production of or the distillation of that species of the lotus except once every 2 years, every 3 years, and even more, to have a quantity that could be commercially produced. So it is very rare. Let me give you like an example. Like for every 1,000 of the white lotus, in this case we will go to higher multiplication, okay? You would have 50 of the pink, but only 1 of the blue.
Yeah.
So,
Ryan, I'd really like to have you talk about what the difference is spiritually in the white. If I have all the money, let me say when I have all the money that I want to spend, why would I want to, and I take it, am I correct that the white lotus oil is less?
Actually, very little in that respect. I would not say it is less, but I would think it is more because its abundance and its ability to grow more.
Okay, so, but I'm talking about cost.
That is the reason of the cost. Mainly it is supply and demand. Supply is very, very tiny.
Even of the white lotus, Riyadh?
Yes.
Okay.
The white lotus exists more in abundance, okay, worldwide. As I said, it grows a lot in China, a lot in India, even in Egypt now, and so on. So we have the ability to, like, harvest it and produce a lot of it. Still, it's not that cheap.
Okay, why would I choose the blue lotus or the pink lotus over the white lotus? What are the characteristics?
Okay, chemically, yes, there are certain differences, okay? But let me say that mostly because of the experience of people, the experience of the different teachers and so on, and also, yes, you see, for instance, the white lotus was looked at, its symbology was always the awakening, remember the god Horus, god of the sun,
right.
Okay?
Yes.
Used to represent, like, the start of the day and so on. And for people, that was what would give them this kind of feeling, the awakening. Now, the real physical effect of the white lotus is definitely the calming, the soothing, and so many cultures, Indian culture, Egyptian culture, believed in a certain effect on the emotions of the people that would, gear them and direct them towards kindness and forgiveness.
Ah.
So it does have that kind of promotion. Okay? So that was, more directing of the human spirit towards, more purity. Okay, through that kind of forgiveness and being kind to people, direct people to go and do good deeds unto others. But it was more for the common people, for the leaders, not the royalty. You understand? It's like for the workers, for their leaders, for the business people and so on, to, be compassionate, more compassionate to the public. But also for women, it was having a nice effect as a floral oil, because it has this kind of herbaceous, floral, but also has a very tiny medicinal note to it as an oil.
Okay.
So it used to attract men also to women.
Really?
Oh, yeah, well, yes, but not in a very sensual way, okay? So it used to have several dimensions, more on the emotional side.
that was going to be one of my next questions to you, is what would we use as an aphrodisiac, or an oil that, well, I'll tell you what I need. I have recently started, I'm on the market for dating, and I want some perfume, Ra'ed. I'm looking through, and just so that you folks know out there, we'll give you the information on going to the site so that you can look and see what you want. But there are literally hundreds and hundreds of oils, from meditation oils, sports and spa blends. There is perfume, ebony perfume, and Egyptian perfume. And I want to talk about what the difference, what does that mean? And I'd like to have you recommend something that I should get from you, Ra'ed. Now, I have to tell you that I'm very, very partial to spicy vanilla notes, anything that's real floral. And, of course, your oils, I have worn your Lotus, and that stays beautiful on me. But I think maybe it has more to do with my personality. I'm more spicy vanilla type person than I am rose.
I am sure that, a lot of your listeners definitely would have the same taste. And let me tell you here that you have combined four or five different questions. I'll try to get back to you. With,
I always do.
With a few. Okay.
Well, let's start out with an aphrodisiac.
Okay. Let me be a little bit clear about the term aphrodisiac, because this is one of the most confusing concepts for people, because we humans do not really behave like animals. It's a lot more complex, okay? Even the discovery of the human pheromones and all what was happening, especially in the last 20 years, in the medical field, in the neuro science, and the arguments and conflict between neuroscientists, whether we humans have what we call the vomeronasal pathway for us, which is a membrane that exists behind the nose that allows us to substitute. It allows usually rats and other animals to, like, if they have anosmia, and if they lose their ability to smell, that their nose would be totally replaced. But we humans understand that it is very hard for us to replace our sense of smell, and people who lose their sense of smell, whether due to accident, to certain disease or surgery or whatever, usually suffer because they cannot anymore enjoy their life, enjoy the food, and lots of complications and reactions and emotional effects in their lives. But let me get back to the concept of the aphrodisiac. And aphrodisiac is any substance that has the ability to excite or stimulate a sexual desire. And the way that works is through the chemistry, okay? And by the way, we humans, unfortunately, have become a totally visual animal. We have become totally dependent on our sense of vision. So nobody now depends on their nose. We are not the hunters or living in the forest anymore. We live by the signage. When we are hungry, We look for all those symbols, the yellow M and the yellow and the all the other symbols that tell us here is food, okay? But animals used to depend on the nose, and that's also that has affected us and affected our way of expressing our experience once we smell. Of course, I can challenge anybody to describe to me with a specific language the right explanation or definition, for instance, of the smell of a banana. Can you do that?
Absolutely not.
Well, unfortunately, that's the case. And due to this, it affects our ability to communicate that experience, and it also has separated us with the most important part of our brain, this part that we call the limbic system, which is totally responsible for our basic needs, our memories, our desires, and so on. So essential oils are pure chemicals, and they do affect our nervous system. When we smell or sniff the essential oils, we have receptors in our nose that capture those molecules that are evaporating in the air, and once these molecules are captured and acquired by the nose and by the receptors, they go through a very complex way of transmission that is electrochemical, and immediately the brain and the different centers are activated. So those centers that affect our sexuality, our desire, we have noticed, and whether the Egyptian, the Indian, the Chinese, and so many cultures, during all those thousands of years, they have noticed, for instance, that certain oils have this effect of stimulating our desire. Now, there is a difference between that stimulation, because our sexuality is also a very complex function. It has to do with our circulatory system, our blood pressure level, our general health, lots of things, okay?
Yes.
So those chemicals have to do with stimulating those centers in the brain that communicate with the different functions of our body. So what we call aphrodisiac essential oils, there are so many, but they do not act the same way on our nervous system. But in general, they do have that effect of stimulation. So I can give you some a number of those aphrodisiac in the single oils. And when we say single oil, it's the oil of one plant, like the lavender. This is one plant, and we call that a single oil, an individual oil. So oils that have been proven to be strong aphrodisiacs could be like the angelica root, the anise seed, the basil, the black pepper, the cardamom.
Basil?
Yes.
And angelica and basil?
Yes. Celery, the cinnamon, clary sage, clove, the ginger, guaiacwood, of course, jasmine, juniper berry, nutmeg, neroli, parsley, patchouli, rosewood, sandalwood, thyme, vetiver, Violet Ilang. Now, you'll see that some have some sweet and nice, attractive fragrance, but some do not. And you would smell something like the Angelica, and it's very spicy and so on. But it's not whether it is sweet and attractive. It's how that chemical combination of what that molecule of the essential oil activates and stimulates those centers in the brain.
What is the difference between the ebony and the Egyptian perfume blends?
Okay. Of course, Egypt has Egypt is geographically located on the tip, the northeast tip of Africa. And Egypt, in so many parts of its history, was extending far to the south, Nubia and Sudan and so on. And Africans had lots of commercial relationships with Egypt. Now, let me give you a little bit of a scientific base of the perfume and perfume industry. Perfume industry, to blend a perfume, we use the language of music. The language of music has four layers for the harmony. The, like, soprano, what we call in the perfume industry the top note, the alto, the middle note, the tenor, which is like the lower note. But in the music, there is the bass, that is the fourth. What is not declared to the public, unfortunately, because it is so sophisticated and so scientific and so hard to explain, is what we keep as perfumers for ourselves. And this is like what I would call the factor X, which is the body chemistry of the person who wears the perfume.
Yeah.
Now, that body chemistry depends on so many things. Your lifestyle, age, the way you eat, the way you sleep, and lots of things, okay? But all these are taken into consideration, but there are certain issues that make actually the larger part. It's like, what is the metallic base of your skin? That we would know only from the color of the hair. So ladies with black hair have high content of iron. Okay, blondes have more phosphorus and so on. Now, what does that mean? It means different hair types and different skins have different reaction or interaction with the essential oils. And due to that, whenever a different person applying the same perfume on their body, 25 to 30 minutes later, depending upon that factor X, the body chemistry, the metallic base of that body will make all the difference. So some people will smell nice, some people will smell neutral, but some people will smell very offensive. Okay? Now, people in old cultures are trained. Mothers teach their daughters what they are supposed to wear and what they are not supposed to wear. Okay,
wow.
But here in the West, in general, people look only at the brand and brand name. And usually they make a lot of mistakes because most of the time they don't tell you for what kind of bees, skin type, hair color, and so on, this perfume was made for the purpose of making more sales. And when you buy something that doesn't suit you, well, it's okay, and you can throw it away and try something else. But that is not the case in the old countries and old cultures, where young girls are trained to wear what they should wear. Now, people of African origin, darker skin, have a different skin type, different underlayer of fat under the skin, and the body chemistry is different. Okay? So according to that, the response to the different perfumes is different. They would, so we in Egypt have more understanding of what suits the African skin. And the ebony line, we have mainly introduced as Utati only two types. One that we call the Kumra, which is for like the brown color, okay? And the other is called Sudanese, which is a perfume for the darker skin. And all the essential oils are blended together in a way that takes into consideration the chemical reaction with the skin of Africans in general.
Let me ask a question, Riyad. Does the skin type change as a person gets older and their hair goes from whatever color it is to a gray color?
Well, no, it doesn't. Okay, it's the state of the skin that changes, yes. Okay, not the type, not the basic chemical structure. The body loses moisture, loses elasticity,
yes.
The skin, I mean.
Yes.
And these have ways to deal with, okay? You need to really feed the skin. The skin is your main organ, so you need to take good care of it. You need to drink a lot of water and so on, because it loses a lot of the humidity. The skin can get drier, can start acquiring more problems. It is affected by internal and external factors all the time, okay? But the basic constituents do not change.
Riyad, we don't have a whole lot of time. I think we're going to run over a little bit, if it's okay with you. I know we told you you'd be done at 8:30. And then Monica Lewis is coming on for us to get our Sabian astrological forecast for the month of September. But I have something important that I would like to have you talk about. And there are many, many essential oils out there to choose from, many brands. Some of them are even marketed through multi-level. And these are what we consider less inferior oils. Now, I think what I would like to do, if I can get a hold of my engineers, Riyad, would you mind going over maybe 10 minutes with us?
Yes, of course.
Okay, if I can get my engineers right now, it's 8:20. I think we'll go to break, and I think we will give Monica a call and let her know that you are going to run over for about 10 minutes, and then we'll run her over for about 10 minutes. So
I prefer fairness, yes.
Okay, so Seth, if you're there listening,
yes,
our wonderful person there pushing all the buttons, science and engineering our show. Seth, are you there? Roddy of Utadi Essential Oils. Okay. The important thing, here's the big one. As I said before we went to break, Ra'ed, there are many, many oils to choose from. Some are marketed multi-level. How's that happen? What's the difference between your oils and those that we see that are a much less, I mean, I can buy a bottle of lavender for $7.
Well, okay. The issue of how it is marketed is not really what makes the difference because definitely there are multi-level companies that would carry very good essential oils versus others that look at lower grade and so on. It's not the way of selling. It's what makes the difference is what is available in the market. And you have to understand that before 1984-85, the public had no access to essential oils in general. All the distillers were specifically tied with long-term deals with big industry, perfumery, cosmetics, and pharmaceuticals, and nobody was allowed to sell out of the industry. And many pioneers in the in different countries wanted to break that and allow the public to start a new revolution for and publicize aromatherapy and make it closer to the hands of the lay people. They didn't want that essential oils would be a monopoly. But like everything or in every field, when there is a large demand, of course, different people get in. So there are lots of novices and a lot of new farmers that decided to get in and produce essential oils. Now, the essential oils, every one of them, and by the way, they are not so big in number. They are less than 500. All the essential oils that exist, and some are subspecies of certain things like eucalyptus. There are about 40 different eucalyptus types. So essential oils are limited in number, and different countries have or geographical source have different ability to produce different plants and consequently the different essential oils. You look at how an essential oil is produced, not from the time we start the process of distillation, but way, way before that. So usually the suppliers of the high-level perfume companies used to pick the best soil, the best seeds or cuttings to start the best plant species, and usually the farmers would have long experience. They are experts in that type. Then the harvesting has incredible conditions. Jasmine is produced one night, and we always would keep our fingers crossed that it would not rain the days before, the couple of days before, or else the essential oil would not be of good quality. Then the harvest should be from midnight till 4 o'clock a.m. Otherwise, 1 hour later, the essential oil starts to move within the plant from allowing the flower to grow and the bud to open to starting to move inside the plant so that it would change its function to the reproduction of that flower. So if the farmer harvests the jasmine at 6 o'clock in the morning, those 2 hours make a difference in the quality of the oil that is processed to produce the jasmine oil. So there are lots of conditions from the way it is farmed, the way it is taken care, harvested, and so on. So if I want to distill the best thing, I would go with the best level of every step, and at the end I would have the best level of oil. This is why the distillation of the essential oils is only to be compared with the distillation of the wines. And of course, people who know the gourmet wine drinkers and people who taste know that a bottle of wine could be anywhere from $2 to $2,000 or more. And it depends upon all these factors, the factor of the soil, the location, the farmer, and so on and so on, until you have at the end a good product. So if I talk about one oil like lavender, lavender could be anywhere from a low level, industrial level. Now, when I say industrial, this is where the way of harvest is not as careful. For instance, it's like using harvesters and machinery that really break the plant material, and the plants are mixed with the soil. Then they have to clean it using water, lots of things like this.
Right.
So there are countries, I can name like China, that would throw in the market huge quantities of very cheap and low-grade lavender. But that is not the lavender you want to use, neither in aromatherapy nor in perfumery. This is very good for chemical companies. They do what we call fractionation, which means a certain process of separating the constituents, and different industries use different parts of that oil. But when you use for high levels of perfumery and aromatherapy essential oils, you want the higher level. Now, good companies usually introduce good essential oils. But sometimes, with the passing of time, they find themselves in a situation where their cost and cost of operation is so high, the amounts of investments required to do that business is so high. So unfortunately, some of the business people would make the decision, let us lower the grade and go for a cheaper quality. And they keep going to cheaper and cheaper and cheaper. And the problem is that you need to train the end user to really know the difference between a low-grade oil and a high-grade oil, which is not really available all over. Okay? So it takes time for people who are dealing with higher quality oils. I have been doing the business with the distribution of the oil and training the distributors for over 12 years, 13 years in the States. So it doesn't come in one day. But believe me, for instance, there is an incredible difference between a $5 lavender and a $900 liter of lavender. Okay?
How about that?
And that is exactly like sipping a small cup of wine from a $5 or $3 bottle versus a $500 or $1,000 bottle. But people who know the tasting, they start to understand the difference in the aroma, the texture, and so on. That's the same thing with the essential oils. But you have to train the nose, because when you open that bottle and your nose start getting this information, it requires some training to understand how that is good and how that is bad. But here is the problem that some of those companies that promote the lower grade essential oils use incredible myths that are so ugly. Like, sometimes I hear some people that I would test, and they would, like, ask me, smell this. So I smell it, and I find it is something so low grade. They tell you, they ask me, did you like it? I say, no. Then they tell you, then your body needs it. I have never seen something so ugly like certain fallacies like this. Okay? But it is part of, let us say, some of the scams that are used in promoting the low-grade oils. And now these low-grade oils are so readily available because of the fact that so many people started to go overseas and look for anybody that could have essential oils available for sale, and usually these would be like the leftovers of the industry or the rejected oils or the industrial oils that are not supposed to be neither in aromatherapy, perfumery, or cosmetics. These were intended for chemical companies to process them. But I have seen them in bottles available in the market. And of course, when you buy a $5-$10 liter of lavender, you can sell 10 mils for $5, or 15 mils, or 30 mils even for $5. The economics are still very wonderful there. But are the benefits the same? No way whatsoever. Neither in terms of the scent or the fragrance or the effects on the body.
And you said that some oils are simply the washes from the vat.
Well, this is sometimes happens, but you see, you have to always train the buyer, train the end user. Okay, how can you really make the distinction between a good product versus a low-grade product?
Well, I can make a distinction. I can feel the difference in the oils. If I put a particular oil on one hand and Utadi oil on the other hand, I can feel the resonance of the oil. I can feel the way it vibrates. I know the spirit, the body of the oil. I could tell like that.
Yes, the oils usually, especially when people are subject to compare. Like if you put in front of you 10 different companies' products and then look at one that is very exquisite, you will immediately see the difference. It's like jewelry, it's like wines, it's like everything. But you see, the public in general is always subject to seeing one product at a time. Okay, you would not recognize the difference between several lavenders except when you bring those different bottles and start smelling them.
Right.
Now, as I said, unfortunately, also some of the wrong fallacies in the market that as someone coming from the old world was astonished that sometimes people that were promoting the healing effects of essential oils, that they were telling people that oils, good oils, should smell terrible and ugly, and that would make them healing. There is that fallacy that a medicine should either taste bad and bitter, or else it would not be effective. That is a total fallacy. A rose should really smell so wonderful, like the rose petals, the flower itself. Otherwise, it's not a true rose, the jasmine, and so on. So if I am extracting from a nice-smelling flower, how could a good oil smell bad? Then I would say it contains its healing effects. Otherwise, it is so sweet that it has to be synthetic or it has to be wrong. That's not the truth. These people usually love to attack the genuine product and attack the good product by preemptive strike against them, so that when the end user smells the higher quality, they would think, oh my goodness, that is too sweet, it is perfumey, it is not healing. That's not true. The truth here is an essential oil is self-contained, and if it is true to its species, it contains all its aspects. You cannot put jasmine on your skin and tell it smell nice and do not have a healing effect on me, or the opposite. I want just your healing effect, but I don't want you to smell nice. It is like the two sides of the same coin.
What about the Sufi blends? I have not experienced any of them, and I'm very attracted to them. What are they about?
Okay. Essential oils, when they blend and combine, they really have the tendency to activate themselves. There are chemical reactions. There is a energy field that immediately starts, okay? And this is really not a hoax. This is really truthful scientifically. And by that we mean the chemical effects, the electrochemical messages that the different neurological centers of the brain get and are activated. So when we make the blends, they have multiple layers of effects because of those new ingredients that form what we call the synergistic effect of the blending, okay? And some of the ingredients have effects on the physical body, on the bloodstream, and on the different organs, but some do affect, like the software that manages our brain, okay? And they even go higher to our consciousness and our ability to feel and so on. Remember that the word perfume comes from the Latin perfumum, which is through the smoke. The whole thing reminds us of the burning of the woods and the resins in the temple. It's all because of that experience that people acquired of their connection with the divine and the sublimation of their and the transformation of their emotions while they are meditating and praying, but also the antibacterial, antiviral effects of the smoke inside of the temple and the church that would kill the germs, so people feel safe from disease. So there is a cleansing effect that is physical, and there is a cleansing effect to the surrounding environment, and there is an internal effect on our psyche, our emotions, and the way we do respond through those smells that we get. So those Sufi experiences now I am shifting to the to talking about the Sufi blends. Sufis are people that practice a certain way of meditation and the dance of the dervish, what we call zikr, and the belief system and so on, activates certain emotions, certain ways, and those essential blends work in combination according to such emotions, such beliefs, and so on, and they help the body to and the mind and the spirit of the person to really get so involved in that kind of experience.
So would I want to have this entire set, all seven of each one of the Sufi blends? Sufi, Baraka,
yes.
Hellage,
okay. People do not need to buy the whole set. They can buy them individually, or they can buy the whole set.
Wouldn't I want to have all of them? There's only seven.
Actually, there is one that we have recently introduced that is called Hafiz. People that would contact us going to our website, which is www.utati.com, they would only if they email us at utati@utati.com, I will send them actually the price list and the explanation or the monographs of all the blends we have. We could not put on the website all the prices and all the products we have. We only picked a few. So I now just email back people with the information and get orders only through emails.
And when you email Ra'ed, let him know that you heard the show or that you know about it through the new website, which will be coming up in the next days, Ascension Road, and my current website, drrainmorgan.com. We very much want you to be able to get whatever information you would like to have and take a look at these oils. They are the most beautiful, sensual oils I have ever experienced. And Ra'ed, before I let you go, and I want to thank you so much for coming on. This has been so
fun. Thank you for having me.
Which one of the perfume blends for dark, dark red hair? Of course, I enhance it a little bit now, but I have olive skin. I don't have the skin of a redhead. I have olive skin because I'm part Native American. What would you recommend for me?
Okay, let me tell you that in some cases, it is preferable for people to go to the singles. Singles meaning using one kind of oil, like in your case, gardenia could be nice, mimosa could be nice, okay? Or if you are in the case where you love the vanilla, vanilla is one of the most wonderful scents. And by the way, if you mix vanilla with hints of other things, even something as simple as the lavender, okay, or it would give more depth, okay. But I have to mention that the Egyptian perfumes that are in the list that you would see were mainly made for general population that was more in the area, so they were concerned more about the social games they play. Okay, so for instance, Cleopatra in our perfumes is the playful lady that wants to play the role of the seductress. Nefertiti was the queen, the mother-in-law of King Tut, but she was a games player. She was like the power behind the throne. A woman that wears that wants to activate that kind of personality within her. We have one with the name of the Queen Hatshepsut that was ruling as a king, not as a queen. So she was like in the place of power. She loved to take control and show people around that she is the boss, she is the leader. Okay, so sometimes perfumes are actually a language. It's part of the vocabulary for social games.
How about Arabian Nights?
This is like when people go to socialize. Like you go with friends and you are in a party, okay? So it is more like to be in a social surrounding. But like in preparation for whatever comes after that.
And what would be the seductress?
Actually, Cleopatra's secret.
Secret.
Yes. And
okay,
there is another one that is more animalistic that we call Secret of the Desert.
I'm sorry, say that again.
There is another one. Okay, Cleopatra's secret is one that really promotes the woman herself to produce her own like pheromones. But there is another one that is like more sensual, that is called Secret of the Desert.
Okay.
Where it is more physical, more sensual.
All right, I'm going to get the whole set. I'm going to call you and give you my credit card, and I'm going to get the whole set.
Well, you're welcome. And
I want it.
We want to keep teaching people that our modern life requires a lot more support, and our stressful life requires that we would have always a mood that is positive and calm, and help ourselves to reduce the depression and so on.
Yes.
And our nose is probably the best gateway to our soul, to our inside. And wonderful smells of natural, higher quality essential oils have incredible effect to give us that kind of support to really face all kinds of adversity in life.
That's wonderful. Utadi.com. You can go to the website, www.utadi.com. That will take you to look at all of the wonderful oils that are there. And as Ra Ed said, you can email him at Utadi, U-T-T-A-T-I, at Utadi.com, and he'll give you special information. Ryan, I want to thank you so very much for coming on.
Thank you very much, and thank you, please, on my behalf, all the listeners for their patience, and we wish them all the best.
Thank you, Ryan, so much for coming on our show, and we'll have you back on again. I'd love to invite you to come to the Sunday night show that I do. Every Sunday night we have Ascension Road, and we'll talk some more. We'll get into some of the medicinal herbs essential oils, the essential oils. We'll deal with some things like anxiety and depression. We'll get more into that.
Okay.
So thank you so very much.
You're welcome.
Ryan.
Thank
Good
you.
Evening.
Thank you. Good evening.
And folks, we'll go to break right now, and we'll get Monica Lewis on the phone, and we'll be right back with our astrological foreclosure. Oh, my God. With our astrological forecast for the month of September. Okay, guys, take us to break.
Stop missing me. Was it when I told you that I'd finally made my choice? And when did you give up on me? Was it after or before I found my voice? I stood alone heading for the shore, and the days rolled by, thinking all the while I needed something more. Everything cave in. Was it when I finally showed my demon skin? And when did you start hating me? Was it after or before your feet led you somewhere you could not see? And when did your smile fall from grace? Did you suffer? Did you murder more than you had ever guessed? And where did my light leave your face? Was it when you laid your second child to rest?
For staying with us. I'm Dr. Rain Morgan. I am the host of Talk Truth Radio. Want to remind you, Bioscalar Energy, Dr. Sandra Rose Michael, is the wonderful sponsor of our show and makes this possible every week that we have these wonderful guests to come on. Go to eesystem.com. Also, sponsoring us is IAB, freedomforlife.com insurance. And it's an insurance that is very new. It is, you can't be turned down for a pre-existing condition. $299 a month takes care of a family of 10. Full comprehensive insurance package which covers alternative healing. You know, your chiropractors and your naturopaths and on. So, IABFreedomForLife.com. And tell them that Dr. Rain Morgan and Truth Talk Truth Radio sent you. All right, without we go on. Now, this part of the show, I know you all like, and I know you like the last part too, because Raw Ed Roddy with Utati Oils, very, very knowledgeable man, very good show. But we like Monica Lewis. Monica does our Sabian astrology forecast for each month. She's started being a regular on our show last month, and we've had lots of folks call us and say, hey, good show. So good job, Monica Lewis. Hi.
Hi, Rain.
How are you?
I'm doing very well. I hope you and everybody else are doing really well.
Oh, sure. I'll bet you. I know I'm doing good, and I'll just bet you that all of those people out there listening to our show are doing great also. Well, we have looked forward to this all month. I have let people know that you were going to be on. And so the forecast for September, and now there's something very important going on besides the forecast, and that is Venus retrograde.
Well, where would you like me to start first?
Let's talk about Venus retrograde right now, because the month of September hasn't hit us. So give us a little overview of Venus retro, and then let's move into the month coming.
Okay, Venus retrograde started, as I mentioned last time I was on July 27th, and Venus will stay retrograde until September 8th. And during this month of August, it's been retrograde the entire month of August. So we've been treated to just watching the energies of the last month with Venus retrograde, and I'd like to bring up some interesting things that occurred with Venus going retrograde. I talked to a number of people, and they gave me feedback about how their lives were faring in August under the influence of Venus retrograde. And one of the things that occurred to a large number of people was they broke up with their husbands or long-standing boyfriend-girlfriend relationships, and they didn't feel bad about it at all. They felt liberated from a relationship that no longer had anything to do with their evolution or served any of their personal needs. So a lot of people broke up, and they never felt happier about breakups in their life, which actually forecasts what Venus retrograde can do. It's how to be your own best friend and how to find, if a relationship isn't working for you, it gets remodeled so it does work, and if it can't be remodeled, it's ended. And that's, I just want to say that that's one feedback I've got from a number of people, is how many people during the Venus retrograde period got in touch with their true self, because we've had Venus retrograding in Leo, and Leo is the sign of one's true self and one's true identity. So a lot of people have come home to themselves, become aware of who they really are, what they really want, what they really need, and they've been very happy to say they are not going to settle for less. So I'm happy to say that even though sometimes ending a relationship is difficult and hard, in this case, I found a lot of happy people who were relieved that they had, and they felt renewed by coming home to themselves. And we have this kind of energy renewal by people coming home to themselves all month and people being reinvigorated by the fact that Venus, in its retrograde transit, conjuncted the Sun on August 17th. And what was interesting about that is, remember last month I was talking about armies going on the march, preparing for the march when Venus became the morning star after its retrograde conjunction with the Sun, which was around August 21st through or August 22nd, depending on which ephemeris you consulted. What I found that was very interesting, I happened to overhear this on a radio show, was that the U.S. military, starting on the morning of August 21st and running through Friday, August 24th, was running a military exercise, which was a simulation of a nuclear attack on Seattle. They were just doing a military exercise based on what if Seattle, a major American city, had been nuked. How would we respond? So they spent the 21st of August to the 24th of August running this exercise around a hypothetical nuclear attack on a major American city. And I thought that was interesting because that verified the Aztec and Mayan myth around the heliacal rising of Venus, which Venus reappeared that morning as the morning star. And according to the Aztec and Mayan myth, when Venus has just reappeared as the morning star at its heliacal rising, until it stabilizes as the morning star, which was actually around the morning of the 25th of August. On the morning of the 25th, you could go out and clearly see Venus staying in the sky for quite a long period before sunrise. Between the 21st through the 24th, Venus was so close to the Sun that it just flickered, and then the Sun would obliterate it from view because it was so close to sunrise. And the point was, the Aztecs said this time period when Venus is the heliacal rising, becomes the morning star, and before it stabilizes, when it's just flickering, which this year was between the 21st of August and the 24th, then that's the time when armies are mobilized. So I thought it was very interesting that this would be the exact time period, the 21st and 24th of August, that the U.S. military was running a major military exercise, exactly timed with these dates that coincide with the Aztec and Mayan understanding of Venus retrograde. So I found that to be a very strong indication that the Mayan and Aztec mythology has some validity.
Yeah, very interesting.
And that's mainly what I would say about Venus retrograde presently. It's still retrograde until the 8th, so people are still working with getting in touch with their true feelings and their true being and everything. But now Venus has become definitely the morning star, so people are preparing, because we've only got about 10 days to go here, roughly, until Venus goes direct. So people are preparing now that they're in touch with their real values and their real selves. They're preparing to go out in the world and demonstrate what their real feelings are and their real values are. So it's just kind of a preparation period for now that I know who I am, I know what I like and what I don't like, and I know why, and I'm not settling for less. I'm preparing to go out in the world and demonstrate or live those values out openly. So it's kind of an exciting time. You know, people are preparing to go forward with their lives.
What were you telling me about Venus going into Virgo?
Let me see. What I'm talking about. Venus won't go into Virgo until October.
Yeah.
Until October. But what I was talking mostly about was Saturn was going into Virgo.
Oh, that was it.
Yeah, that's moving on to the September forecast a little bit here. The September forecast, the first thing we have to know is that Saturn does go into Virgo on September 2nd. And right now, Saturn is in 30 degrees Leo, and it's only got, today's the 29th, it's only got three more days. Saturn is in Leo, only three more days. So it's wrapping up, presently Saturn is wrapping up its 2.5-year visit to Leo, and it won't be back into Leo for another 30 years.
So, now, what does it mean to the Leo people to have Saturn in Leo?
Well, it means to the Leo people in particular that they've been really working on Saturn and Leo, a deep restructuring and affirmation of their personal identity. Saturn and Leo means, are you really who? Saturn would ask the question, it's about reality. Are you really who and what you think you are? In other words, who you think you are, who you believe yourself to be, had better measure up to the truth of your being. So while Saturn has been in Leo for everyone, but particularly for those people with many energies and planets in Leo, they've had to take a look at themselves and do some sober reflection about where the image of themselves, how the image of themselves measures up to the reality of themselves. And they've been deeply thinking about how they can become more themselves, and where they didn't measure up to their true selves, they've been challenged to restructure that, to tear it down and rebuild it, so that Saturn and Leo will challenge you to rebuild yourself, restructure yourself, remodel yourself, improve yourself, so that it says, now, you are who you think you are. You know, being and image become one. And that's what Saturn and Leo is about, is true being and image are much more closely aligned. So we've had 2.5 years of Saturn and Leo, which is, everybody has been challenged, but particularly people with Saturn and Leo have been challenged about, are you who you say you are? Are you who you think you are? Are you really? That's the question that's been asked. Are you the person and being who you believe yourself to be? And we're now at the end of that, with only three more days to go in the last degree of Leo. So at this point, the remodeling of personal identity, which is what Leo is about, is pretty much concluded. And now 30 degrees Leo's Sabian symbol is an open letter to all humanity. So it simply says, okay, I've done my remodeling, and I'm going to show you my real self. Now you can take a look at me. It's showtime. So this time, as we sum it up, we hope the remodeling has brought us much closer to our true nature, and in the process, we're ready to show our true self and shine like the sun that Leo is to everyone and everything. This is the real me. Here it is.
Monica, I have to share this with you. I've been talking for weeks now about having a new partner, and my friend Gare Bear, better known as Gare Bear. He's a very talented graphic artist, and he has taken that position as my partner. He has the other half of, my business partner, he has the other half of what I don't have. I have a great formula, and I teach classes, I'm teaching prosperity and abundance and reprogramming the DNA and ascension, but I've needed somebody that can work on my website and get my presentation package together and do all this stuff, you know, the labels for my CDs and the jackets for the covers and put my classes on DVD to go up on the website. All this stuff that my mind would fairly be boggled with. I mean, there's just no way. I don't understand HTML. But Gare does, and when he and I were talking, I said to him, it's showtime. I have the other half of what you need, and you have the other half of what I need. It's now showtime. And our package is nearly together, and we're almost ready to begin marketing our program with all of the aforementioned. And I am just blown away, again, one more time, that you have used that terminology because I said it. It's showtime.
Well, that's amazing. What time do you have a date for your debut of your showtime?
Well, no. The dates that we're looking at for our first two-day workshop is October 20th and 21st or the 27th and the 28th. But our first big ad is coming out in the Best of Phoenix, letting people know that we're now open for business, and that will be the end. I think it's September 26th. And listen, if anybody wants to call in, let me give you a phone number, 877-270-8714. I have been meaning to do this, and I just get so into the conversation that I forget to give a number for people to call. 877-270-8714. And there's another number, 530-413-4515, and we will definitely be giving you Monica Lewis's contact information. And I want to encourage all of you listening, if you want a Sabian astrology reading that will literally alter your life, I highly recommend, I encourage you to get a hold of Monica, and we will give her information. But those are our dates, and I think that the Best of Phoenix edition comes out, I think it's September 27th, I think it is.
You're
but
right on
our
time.
First 2D workshops will either be 20th and 21st or 27th and 28th. We haven't set that date yet, but those are our perspectives. What do you have to say?
Well, I was just listening to you when you gave off the dates of the time that you're putting the ad in. You were describing something about Leo getting someone who complements your other half, but the work you want him to help you with, doing things with technology and, you know, techno speak that you're not familiar with.
Yeah, I can't do it. Just
perfectly
can't.
Saturn in Virgo. And so your dates for your first ad, your dates for the time the ads come out fall near the harvest full moon. So a lot of what you're doing has to do with Saturn's entrance into Virgo. And specifically, let's just put Saturn in Virgo in a real short mantra for people to remember. Saturn in Virgo is work smarter, not harder.
Oh, I like that.
And that's really, if you want a short description of Saturn's entrance into Virgo, Saturn is the taskmaster and the teacher of lessons it's necessary to learn. Well, one of the lessons Saturn wants to teach starting September 2nd, when it goes in early in the morning on September 2nd, that would be 6:49 in Phoenix in the morning, it was going to teach you how to work smarter, not harder. And it sounds like, because you've teamed up with this man who has talents that you don't have and can do what you need to have done, you've already got the lesson down. Because you're already working smarter, not harder, by teaming up with him.
Yeah.
And that's exactly both. Saturn and Leo is, what talents do I lack? Well, you lack certain skills with technology and equipment that he has. And so he's your perfect complement because he fills in the missing pieces for you. And that's Saturn and Leo. But the fact that you're working smarter, not harder, that's Saturn and Virgo. And you're going public with the ads and what you're doing when Saturn is in Virgo. So all this that you've teamed up with and everything you've said about how...
hear me?
How, yes. Can you hear me? Do we have a problem?
Can you hear me, Monica?
Yes, I can hear you.
Okay, I tried to... sorry about that, folks. I tried to switch to another phone. My battery is looking shaky here as I'm listening to you talk. That's not going to be good.
No, you sound good from this end to me.
Okay, so I have put that into place.
I want to tell you, you've done a beautiful job of wrapping up Saturn and Leo in the best possible way by finding a person to complement you with skills you don't have, and you make a better team. You're better together than apart.
Yeah.
So that's really, you've done very well with Saturn and Leo, and the fact that you're going to make, you know, you're telling everyone that that's what you're doing, that's, you're acting out, you know, an open letter to all humanity, which is Saturn in the 30th degree of Leo.
We're going to launch Ascension Road.
Wow.
And the formula has become so complete, and we're very, very excited. So tell me what else. What else is coming?
Well, let's take a look at this. So just briefly, I'll finish Saturn in Virgo here. We have 2.5 years to learn how to work smarter, not harder. And you're well on the way to doing that right now. So you'll be fine. Right now you're starting in a beautiful position, and you'll become more fine-tuned as time goes on with Saturn and Virgo. You guys will get more efficient and better at it. So, but that's the message for everyone. Saturn's in Virgo's mantra, work smarter, not harder. Restructure your work life so that you get more out of the effort you put in. As I told people, I'm going to be giving a lecture locally on this on Friday night, is a lot of people work hard for peanut shells. This is learning how to work, don't have to work that hard and get a nice crop of mixed nuts. But moving on, as you asked about more things, Saturn entering Virgo is the big news of September. But following up on that, we have some dynamite things going on in September as well, especially in the first 10 days here, the first 15 days, 10 to 15. On the 7th of September, Pluto goes direct. Pluto's been going retrograde, and Pluto is right now in the 27th degree of Sagittarius, exactly conjunct the galactic center. So it's been anchoring the energy of the Earth deeply into the galactic black hole. Now, Pluto itself is kind of a planet of black holes anyway. So it's now been retrograde, and it's going to go direct at 27 degrees Sagittarius, which is the galactic center. So on September 7th, when Pluto goes direct, a lot of energy that's been going deep within, making great inner change, now you'll be ready to show those deep changes on the outside. Profound change has been happening inside people's lives. Now they're going to showcase the changes outwardly. People are going to notice, my, how you've changed. And then on September 8th, we've been talking about Venus retrograde. Venus will turn direct on September 8th in the 17th degree of Leo, which has to do with a rehearsal, camaraderie. Everyone will be ready to, when Venus goes direct, everyone will be ready to show how their values have changed, to show their new self out, their new values, their new beliefs. And they'll be very much telling everyone about how they have changed and what their value shift is. So we have some exciting news on the 7th and 8th. We have profound shifts around values and around directions of life, which will be coming on the 7th and 8th of September. And then to kind of top it off, on Mars trines Neptune also on the 8th of September, which means we're dealing with the energy to go forth with our dreams. It's Mars trining Neptune sort of finishes off this whole period of Venus and Pluto going direct, and it's saying go forward with what you have in mind. You know, act on your dreams, go forward. What you have in mind, just keep going on. Keep going ahead. The 20th degree of Aquarius where Neptune sits is peace be with you, mission accomplished. So all the deep transformation of Venus retrograde and Pluto retrograde and Saturn finishing up with Leo and entering Virgo is all now been grounded. We're now ready to just barrel ahead, keep on going. And to make sure that we go ahead with a lot of new surprises, the Sun on September 9th opposes Uranus, and a Sun-Uranus opposition can be some real big surprises. You know, we call the big surprise you didn't expect will show up. So I just want to let people know around September 9th, too, with all this deep change going on, they may have a day of upsets and profound surprise, things they never expected to happen will.
That's the 9th to the 15th.
That's the 9th of September, Sun-Uranus opposition. And it just means that people will open up to those new changes. Those new changes will erupt in surprising ways. People will behave differently than they ever thought. Situations will arise they never could have dreamed of. And I just want to kind of give people a heads up around September 9th to be prepared to be surprised. Be prepared to be shocked even. And that takes pretty much a state of the first week of September. Those are the major highlights. Moving on to the second week of September, which is September 10th to the 16th, we have the beginning on September 11th, 2007, we have the new moon in Virgo, and it is a solar eclipse. A solar eclipse is, of course, when the sun and moon conjunct, and as you know, we have a partial solar eclipse when the sun is obscured. What that really means is a solar eclipse lasts for 6 months, so the effect of the new moon in Virgo will last until early March 2008. And this new moon in Virgo solar eclipse is about our future. It's about going on with our life mission. What are we, all this profound change that we've been doing here and these surprises and upsets have been all getting us ready to take advantage of the new moon on September 11th and the solar eclipse, which happens then. And this new moon in Virgo is 19 degrees Virgo, Sabian symbol, and this is a swimming race. It's not about competition, even though it looks like a competition. It's a swimming race, like an Olympic swimming race. It's about emulation. It's in Virgo. It's saying, be the best you can be. Find a mentor. Emulate the, you know, emulate your biggest hero or the person you admire most who's done what you want to do. Find someone that you can admire and emulate them. And do your best, just do your best. Because the only real competition is with yourself, not with anybody else.
Yeah.
And that new moon solar eclipse is part of a grand, beautiful grand cross. The new moon at 19 Virgo is opposed by Uranus, because I just said a couple days before, the Uranus and the Sun were in opposition. Well, the new moon is still an orb to opposing Uranus. And that's, so it's a new moon, Uranus opposition. And then there's another opposition in the heavens, Mars in Gemini opposite the Pluto, which is still at 27 degrees Sagittarius, the galactic center. And those two form a grand cross. New moon opposite Uranus, and then Mars opposite Pluto. And they form a square in the heavens, or they cross each other at right angles. Something like the Four Corners area between Colorado, New Mexico, and Utah. It makes a four corners, which is called a mutable grand cross because they're the mutable signs. And what this means, essentially, is this new moon combined
hooked into this Grand Cross formation means that at this time, at the solar eclipse, we're emulating someone we admire, so being the best we can be. We're going to put our mind on a whole brand new foundation, because a mutable Grand Cross means essentially a profound change on the mental level. It means we now will act on all those changes that we're building up the first 10 days of September and culminating then, and we're going to put ourselves on a brand new foundation. We do not act the same. We do not think the same. We have simply, truly changed in the twinkling, what appears to be in a twinkling of an eye to the outer world. You like my, how you changed.
Yes.
And, but it's been building by all these Venus retrogrades and Pluto retrogrades and Saturn going through Leo and coming into Virgo. It's all the culmination. So the new moon, the solar eclipse new moon, is going to take all the energy of the Saturn and Leo, the Saturn going into Virgo, and all the planetary aspects I've mentioned, and put us on a whole new mental foundation, a real quantum leap in consciousness. And that's profound because, again, the Pluto is still sitting on the galactic center. So this new moon, solar eclipse in Virgo, has a lot to do with, it's a step on the road to 2012. It's a big step on the road to 2012. Because it puts us on a whole new mental plane.
And that will begin what date?
It's September 11th.
Okay.
2007 is the new moon in Virgo solar eclipse, which is part of a mutable, is one of the arms on a mutable Grand Cross. And just studying this, I looked at this, and it's really profound. The more I looked at it, with the Pluto being still at 27 Sagittarius on the galactic center, then it's this new moon solar eclipse is definitely a piece of the puzzle on the road to 2012. It's a step on the road, a major one. So we'll see. And the biggest part is it seems it's just going to lift us up and put us on a whole new mental understanding of things. We'll suddenly have a brand new mindset and say, but there's a lot more. The Mars is activating the deep change. This new moon solar eclipse, it activates the deep changes that have been building. And now we're going to act out. Now we're going to take off with them. I think that's why the new moon is really appropriately a swimming race. It's the gunshot's gone off. Now we're going to show all the training you're doing. Now you're going to show it. You're going to emulate and become greater than you ever could imagine based on this new understanding. We'll see what happens, you know. But it looks like everyone's going to find themselves in a whole new mental playing field, whole quantum leap in understanding and reach.
I'm excited.
And, of course, since this will be going on, this new moon kicks it off. And I think this is important because, of course, it just happens that September is a huge anniversary, we know. New moon falling on that for the next 6 months implies to me a lot of a new mental understanding of the event of September 11, 2001.
A new mental understanding of 9/11.
Exactly. And a Grand Cross means a literally coming into a brand new... When you get a Grand Cross, it's like a quantum leap in understanding. It's a type of understanding that takes you from one level to another. It's like the difference between having a high school diploma and having...
A PhD.
A PhD. It's that kind of quantum leap, you know, in mental maturity. It's going to get, so I think it's a very important anniversary of the attack on the World Trade Center, too, that it occurs here. We're going to come into a brand new understanding of what that event was really about. And since we went into Iraq on the spring equinox of in March, and I can't remember which year we went in, but we went in on the spring equinox, which is essentially 6 months, the solar eclipse. I said last for 6 months, so it'll be early March, the new moon in Pisces in March 2008. So essentially that will parallel, that six-month period is sort of paralleling the effect of the eclipse, parallels the time period between the time we were attacked and the time we decided to act or react in a military fashion. So there's going to be a whole new evaluation of that. We'll see how that comes about. I think this new moon falling on the anniversary is going to profoundly affect how we see that event.
But that's merely speculation. I think we should all just observe. You know, what shift in mentality occurs around September 11, 2007, the sixth anniversary, and see what happens. I don't know what will come out of it, but I do know that I would be not surprised to see a profound shift in understanding.
I'm teaching a developing psychic abilities class Thursday, the 13th. So it will be interesting to see, you know, how I teach that class and what comes up in that class.
Well, it will be profound because on September the 13th is only 2 days, and the new moon lasts, the new moon period lasts 3.5 days. So you'll be in the, still in the phase of the moon that is the new moon when you teach that class. So you ought to have a very interesting time asking how people went through the solar eclipse. How did they feel on September 11th? What energies came in? What understanding? What insights? What shifted consciousness?
Because that'll be interesting.
It's definitely going to put you in a whole new playing field in mental comprehension. That's what the solar eclipse new moon has. And now that we're looking at the week of September 17th through the 23rd, we have to look at the fact that the sun will square Mars on the 17th. And a Mars-Sun square around the 17th is people get impatient. There's angry, blunt, emotional outbursts. Mars square the sun, a lot of people will be getting emotional around then. We're coming up near the first quarter of the moon when you're going in a new direction, so the tension of this new moon, solar eclipse, grand cross effect will probably come out in that Mars-Sun outburst around September 17th. And it'll be in the most positive way. These angry, blunt outbursts of Mars square the sun will clear the air. They'll clear the air. Because later on the very same day, we have a Mercury-Venus sextile later in the day, which means, okay, people blew up and got angry and, you know, got it off their chest, so to speak. But then Venus-Mercury would say, okay, we are now aware of how you really feel. Let's talk it over. And Venus sextile Mercury means that now there can be honest, heartfelt communication where you can resolve the outburst. It's like saying, oh, I didn't know you felt that way. Now that I do, let's just talk about what's really going on. So the nice thing is this outburst and its positive extent can open up something that has been buried that needs to be brought into the open. But when it's brought into the open, there'll be a receptive environment that says, okay, it's out in the open. Let's deal with it and let's resolve it harmoniously. But I just bring up, you know, the 17th is a day that if people are emotionally short-tempered, you know, don't hold it against them. But the effort, the best way to use that Mars Sun square is to clear the air. And this, after everybody's got it off the chest, say, okay, now you've got it off your chest. Now let's really talk about what we can really do. Venus sextile Mercury, a harmonious communication.
Kind of like having makeup sex.
Yes, but it's more than that. It's saying, yes, we'll make an adjustment. Venus Mercury, we'll make an adjustment. You know, your agitation or your dislike of the situation as is justified. We'll make an adjustment to accommodate what you've been upset about. We'll reharmonize it. We'll pay attention.
Isn't that how makeup sex works? Oh, never mind. That's another subject. That's for another show. I just get carried away every now and then, you know?
Yep. That's somewhat how it does, but in this case, where I'm saying if people need to talk, they'll need to let them talk so that the outburst isn't just a temper tantrum. It gets somewhere with people establishing more harmonious relations. And looking at the 19th to the 21st of September, we have a series of power struggles that ensue, and this may be very interesting. We have Sun square Pluto.
And that starts the 19th?
Yep, on the 19th. We have Sun square Pluto. And, we have Sun square Pluto's power struggles. You know, just people get into real power struggles. This could probably manifest in international affairs, national affairs, or in corporate or group situations. There's a real power struggle about who's going to win
you know, I live, you die type power struggle. And what will occur there is that this power struggle will get more intense because we have also a sun-moon square on the 19th, which is the first quarter of the moon. And because the power struggle is over, the power struggle is going to be over, which direction are we going as a group? And each person wants the whole group to turn in the direction that they've chose, and other people in the group don't want to go in that direction. So there's going to be a power struggle over, we're going in a new direction, now which new direction is it, yours or mine? And people are out to make sure that the group goes in the direction they want.
It's so, my direction.
Yeah.
I like it all the time, though. You know, none of the planets have to do anything for me to want everything to go my way.
Yeah, well, this is going to be a tense power struggle over it. And it's going to be intensified by the sun square Pluto and also the sun square the moon, which is the first quarter square, because the first quarter square of the moon is the urge to go in a new direction. It's just a question of whose new direction is it going in, yours or mine, and we're going to struggle over it.
Well, I hope my partner, Gerber, I hope he doesn't want to start teaching the formula, and I'm going to want to teach Qigong.
You may have an issue over the classes, like, we should teach this class, yes, I agree, but we should do it my way, no, we should do it this way or that way. That may come out that way.
Okay.
And the reason I bring that up is that's going to go on, like I said, to the 21st, because on the 21st we have a Mars-Pluto opposition. And a Mars-Pluto opposition is ruthless competition. It's like, you know, we've been arguing over this for the last 2 to 3 days, and now now it's down to the wire. I'm going to win.
It's my way.
Ruthless competition.
And there is no highway.
There is no highway. It's you know, we've been arguing and struggling over this for 2 to 3 days, and finally on the 21st of September, Mars opposite Pluto, it's going to be down to ruthless competition. You know, like, it's going to be one way or the other, and winner take all. And the interesting thing happened is that finally people will get into this power struggle, and along with this power struggle will come a Mars-Pluto opposition, and then later in the day will be Venus and Leo opposite Neptune and Aquarius, which Venus opposite Neptune can be a power struggle based on different values. My values are not like yours. Venus opposite Neptune can mean a total misunderstanding of the other person's intent and values. Venus opposite Neptune could be two things. It could be universal compassion, like suddenly you could say, why are we at each other's throats over this? This is stupid. You know, we're wrecking our friendship. We're, you know, ruining something. So let's just stop a minute and see if we can't be compassionate, Venus opposite Neptune, and see the point of view of the other person trying to make, which we won't feel like doing because Mars opposite Pluto is your eyes are narrowed and you're a charging bull. You want it your way, period. But Venus opposite Neptune might pull you up short and say, wait a minute, we don't have to ruin our friendship or relationship over this. Let's slow down and try to figure out what the other person is really saying so we can be more empathetic and compassionate. That's the positive news. The bad news about Venus opposite Neptune combined with Mars opposite Pluto is you could be in a ruthless competition over a total misunderstanding of what the other person is doing. You think you know what they're up to, but Neptune is fooling you. You really don't know what each other is up to, but you believe that you absolutely know what's going on. So I'm just saying the 21st is a day, this whole period from the 19th all the way to the 21st is a period where there'll be some power struggles, and you can bet on some confusion. And people will be absolutely convinced that they know exactly what's going on. And they're actually in a fog. They may be very confused as to what is the real intent, but they think they know. So I'm just saying it's a time there from the week of September 17 and 23 here, early part of the week, the first 4 days, to be aware. You know, you're going to have some stuff go on, and you're going to have to be very careful to believe that what you think you know, you may not know as much as you think you do.
but you'll be really out to defend your own territory, and you'll really believe it. So it's a time to kind of be aware that you're in that mood, and other people are too.
Okay.
So it's saying slow down, take some breathers when you get into this ruthless competition mode, or you're at each other's throats over, I have to have it this way, and that's it. Take some time out, get some breathers, try to see things a little more clearly. And what I'm also warning, don't take it so dreadfully serious that you utterly destroy a relationship that you may value very much. On the other hand, if this relationship you're in that produces the power struggle really is an illusion, you will see that too with Venus opposite Neptune. It'll show that this isn't what I thought it was, and if this relationship is based on illusions and false values. So it's going to be a very revealing time, though the revealing will come through power struggles and disillusionment. That's the first 4 days of that week. And then we have some fun on September 22. The sun is in Virgo for the very last day. We're on the eve of the fall equinox for the northern hemisphere and the spring equinox for the southern hemisphere. We're summing up the time of the sun being in Virgo, so we're looking at this whole month around the 22nd. What have we all learned about our beliefs, our thinking process, and our work situations, especially power struggles around who is the employee and who's the boss here? What have we learned during this time that the sun transits Virgo? And as we sum that up, we get ready for the autumn equinox, or the spring equinox, depending on your hemisphere, because the sun will enter Libra on September 22nd. And September 22nd, when the sun enters Libra, is a time when you get into, let's put everything back into balance. We've been nitpicking all the month of September. I think the first 3 weeks we've nitpicked over everything. Let's try to bring back some balance and harmony to this. So the sun going into Libra, you're going to be looking really deeply at your relationships and how you can bring balance and harmony to your relationships. And that means with your work, with yourself, with anything you can name. You'll be looking at trying to bring in more balance and harmony. The interesting thing about that is that the biggest deal after the spring equinox, it's the equinox itself, is the balance of light-dark. As we now turn to the biggest event of this week is actually on the 26th. It is the full moon of September, and that will occur on September 26th. That full moon will be the sun will be in 4 degrees Libra, the moon in 4 degrees Aries. And that full moon of September 26th is known as the harvest moon. And it's called that because any full moon that is closest to the fall equinox is always called the harvest moon. And the harvest moon is the biggest and brightest full moon of the year. It's simply because at that time of the moon's orbit around the Earth, the moon is closer to the Earth than it is any other time of year. So that full moon is the biggest and brightest. It's also called the harvest moon because it was the autumn equinox, the time of the balance, the scales, when the harvest is brought in and the results of the year is weighed. It has a lot to do with Jewish New Year and Yom Kippur and the whole period of the High Holy Days in the Jewish tradition. It's that balance of karmic balance. Let's get everything balanced out here. It's like the ledgers, you know, at the accountant's office. Okay, let's look at what's been going on here. Here's the balance sheet. Here's the positives on the balance sheet and the negatives on the balance sheet. So this last week, right at the fall equinox in the northern hemisphere, has to do with bringing things into balance. And mostly, the harvest moon has to do with bringing things into karmic balance. You're looking now at the positive and negatives on the karmic balance sheet. And this particularly refers in very specific ways to the power of the Jewish high holy day, Yom Kippur, the holiest day in the Jewish calendar, Yom Kippur. This has this whole thing of the autumn equinox and the full moon on the 26th of September all brings in the energies around the holy day of Yom Kippur and all that that means, the balance and of the balance sheet in the Book of Life. What are you doing? How's it look on the karmic ledger here? And that's a time for you to look at your relationship, especially at this full moon, which will start on the 25th. There's 3 days to the full moon, and this year it will be September 25, 26, and 27 will be the full moon period. And at that time, you can take a really deep, serious look at how am I doing on my relationships? How am I doing with balance and harmony with the universe? I want to emphasize this doesn't just mean balance and harmony in your personal relationships, though that has a lot to do with it. It has to do with more, okay, let's see how the balance sheet is working out on harmony between heaven and earth. It's every kind of harmony you can imagine. What's your harmonic relationship with nature? What is your harmonic relationship with your own being? Harmony and relationship and balance on any level you can imagine. So that's the big week. The autumn equinox festival comes in there. And I just happened to look on my calendar here. Yom Kippur starts on Saturday the 22nd, the eve of the autumn equinox. So there it is. You know, it's, you can see how Yom Kippur fills into this full moon. And the Sukkot, the Feast of Booths, occurs on the 27th, which is the last day of the full moon period. So it's all in this time period. We're working from the fall equinox through the 27th of September about the balance. What balances are we maintaining between heaven and earth, between all the interesting things that go on in our lives? Now, part of that is sub-note to that. That's the big event of the last week is the autumn equinox and the full moon. But subtext to that is Mercury and Pluto will be sextile on the 24th of September, which has to do with deep thought and balanced concentration. Mercury will be in Libra, Pluto in Sagittarius. So we'll be looking at deep thought and balanced concentration. So as we review our life on the autumn equinox balance sheet, we'll be in deep thought about just how is it really going to stack up. And finally, on the 27th of September, Mercury leaves Libra and enters Scorpio at 10:18 a.m. Mountain Standard Time. And that means that Mercury goes into Scorpio. Mercury and Libra, we've been working about mental balance and harmony and how to maintain all this. When Mercury goes into Scorpio on the 27th of September, we'll be going deep within ourselves to see, okay, I see what's out of balance, or I want to know how balance is maintained. So I'm going to probe deeply into being behind the scenes. Mercury in Scorpio is detective work. It's not about beauty and harmony. It's about digging into what goes on behind the scenes that you don't know about. So this search for balance and harmony that's been going on for the last 4 or 5 days since the fall equinox, now with Mercury going to Scorpio, is a probing for if it's out of balance. I want to know what makes it out of balance, and I'll go fix it. Or if it's in balance, I want to see how that balance is really maintained. I want to see the wizard behind the curtain, so to speak. So from then on, Mercury at the 27th will be probing deeply, looking for more information, a lot of detective work. And to wrap up the next few days, which we're still dealing with the effect of the full moon, the harvest moon, the 28th will have a semi-square with Uranus, and that means there'll be some sudden, mentally we'll get some surprises again. If we go probing into the depths, we're going to, in our detective work, we're going to find some things out we didn't know, and they'll be shocking, a little bit surprising. The other thing that happens on 28th September is Mars enters Cancer from Gemini. When Mars was in Gemini, we were all activated on the mental level. Mars going into Cancer, we're going to be activated, because Mars is activation, on the feeling level. how do you feel about what you know. It won't be so important that you know something. It'll be more important how does the information make you feel. That's going to be something. So we now have Mercury and Scorpio and Mars and Cancer, so we have some, these, all these planets have moved into the water signs of Cancer.
Oh, yeah. Sure.
And so it's going to be more about how does the information make you feel, and how you're going to be acting on your feelings. Information will evoke emotion, and you will act from that, the emotion that the information evokes. It's not about facts. It's not about information. It's not about clarity of thinking. It's about how do you feel about that, and what is how, and when, now that you feel that way about that, what are you going to do based on that feeling? So be aware of that from this time on, at the end of the month, the last 3 days, you can be sure people will react to the information emotionally.
And me being a Cancer moon. Isn't that nice?
Right. And anyone with profound water, but it's anybody, you'll find even the most, heady types, people who are really airheads, will find to their surprise that they will be reacting emotionally to what they know.
And that'll start around the 28th, 29th?
Yeah, it'll start on the 27th. The full moon, as I said, wraps up. It's really the 25, 26, and 27th. And Mercury goes into Scorpio on the 27th. So as the full moon wraps up, the full moon effect wraps up, Mercury goes into Scorpio and Mars goes into Cancer on the 28th. About those last 3 days, as I just say, from the 27th to the end of the month, you're going to notice a real change. People are not going to be so heady. They're not going to be taking it from information or intellect. It's all about what does the information make me feel.
I have a question about the harvest moon.
Yes.
Now, that's on the 28th, or the 26th.
The harvest moon is
I'm
on
sorry,
the 26th.
The harvest moon is on the
exactly
26th.
On the 26th.
It is said that this is the one single night of the year that the energies of the moon meet with the energies of the earth in such a way that there's an energetic and a physical youthing that can occur. What do you know about that?
I didn't hear that. What can occur on that time that you were told?
A physical youthing, youthing. You can become younger.
I've never heard of that, but I would say that that might be true, because the harvest moon has to do with real harmony and balance. At any time, anything and energy is attuned to deep harmony and balance, the music of the spheres, to borrow a phrase, there's always an effect of harmony creates relaxation and rejuvenation. It always creates beauty, which can be growing younger. It restores harmony. So I would assume the energy of the that time would be have a rejuvenating effect because it's so harmonic.
That's interesting. That would be a very good time to eat lots of Sunrider food, because the Sunrider is pure rejuvenation. So let's everybody that's on Sunrider, and if you're not, get on it. Let's everybody just eat huge quantities of Sunrider food, and it'll just take 15, 20 years off of us.
Yeah, it's a time of real alignment. And to finish out the last 2 days of the month, the 29th of September and the 30th, a lot of this is just the energy going on. You'll be seeing the Mars in Cancer, the effects of this, of Mercury and Mars going into water signs, writing out the last days of the month. And the last thing to say is on the 30th, the moon goes into Gemini in the morning, on the last day of the month, the 30th of September. And moon in Gemini would mean now we want to talk about how we feel about everything we know. That's one thing you'll have. You'll want to talk about everything you know, but how do you feel about it? So Moon in Gemini on the last day of the month, which is a Sunday, is that certain people will walk up and they'll want to be talkative. Because Moon in Gemini always means people want to talk. They want to communicate. They want to visit. But mostly what they'll want to be talking about is the effect of the full moon and how they feel about what they've discovered.
Okay.
Whether they feel out of sorts and they're angry about it, or whether they're beginning to find out things. There'll just be a lot. So we'll end the month on a communication note. We'll want to talk about this full moon and the effect of Mercury going into Scorpio and Mars going into Cancer.
Well, that's always a good thing.
Yeah, people will want to talk about how information makes them feel. So that's one thing that you can be, and since it is a Sunday, you can be sure people will be sitting around at the Sunday brunch or wherever they're having their leisurely Sunday morning, talking about how they feel about what they've learned or know. And I think that'll be really good. And on a really positive note, I think that's the best way that the month ends, because now we get to talk about our feelings. What's the impact of information on people?
I've been taking notes in my day runner so that I have an idea I can remember, and I'm going to listen to this CD again. I called Gary before the show started, and I said, are you going to listen to the shows tonight? He said, yes. And I said, can we download and record these right away so that we can get them up on the site for people to listen to, because there is so much coming on the Ascension Road and DrRainMorgan.com websites. We are going to have teaching materials, and Monica is part of what we will be teaching, the Sabian astrology. So this is going to be fun. I'm excited. I'm going to listen to these again and be watching the days to see what happens and how this goes. Now, Monica, you're coming on the Sunday show also.
Yes.
And, yeah, we have a new show, Ascension Road Radio, on Sunday nights at 8:30, from 8:30 to 9:30, and we're going to be doing, probably on the Wednesday show and the Sunday night show, we're going to be doing a show about Halloween, about Samhain. And what day does Samhain fall on this year?
It's on Wednesday, October 31st.
31st, okay.
It is Halloween.
So that's a Wednesday.
Yes, it is. It's a Wednesday.
Well, you have quite a story to teach about Halloween or Samhain.
Yes,
I look forward to doing that. Monica, give your information. And again, people, I highly encourage you to get a hold of Monica and have her do a full session with you, a full Sabian astrology reading. It's life-altering. You will never be sorry that you did this. Monica, give your info, please.
Okay. My phone number that I can be reached at in Louisville, Colorado, is 303-665-4675. I can be reached by email at the Sabian, that's THE SABIAN, the Sabian at webtv.net.
All right. And we'll be booking you for next month also in September. You'll be back on. And we'll let everybody know, I'm not sure just how much longer the Wednesday show is going to go, but I'm sure we'll have a few more weeks of it, and then the Sunday show. But September would be the 26th. Wednesday night, that would be the last Wednesday.
Yeah, we're going to have that on the radio show on the Harvest Moon.
Yeah.
So we can talk about the effect of all that. I have one question for you. In the Venus retrograde period, did you find it interesting than anything of what I said about what people told me about Venus retrograde? Did you find that occurring in your own life?
About what?
The Venus retrograde. Did you find that you were coming home to your own values independent of what anyone else thought or what anyone else thought.
Yes.
You
well, I'm very, very much moving into all of that, the way I think about things, the way I think things should be and the way they should work. It especially plays out in the new program that my partner Gary and I have, and his wonderful wife Karen. You know, we don't want to leave Karen out because she's Gary's wife, and hopefully here in the not-too-distant future she's going to be taking care of us. That's going to be her new job, so we don't want to leave Karen out. But there's so much going on with the new program, and, you know, a long-term relationship ended for me several months back, and, you know, I'm in the dating market again, Monica, and that means doing things my way, too. You know, there's a phase of that where I don't live the way anybody else thinks I should. That kind of, for me, plays out in a lot of different ways. So I do find this whole thing very interesting.
Yeah, I found it fascinating, especially when I heard the announcement of a military exercise right during the period when Venus had reappeared, which was exactly when the Aztec Mayan myth said armies were mobilized, the exact period. And I just happened to overhear that on a newscast.
Yeah.
And I thought that was a profound synchronicity.
All right, I want to thank Monica Lewis for being on the show tonight. We went a half an hour over, and my engineers, I'm sure, will deal harshly with me, perhaps at gun or sword point. And we want to thank them. We will be here again Sunday night at 8:30. Tune in for Sunday night's Ascension Road Show. We are going to be talking with you about Sunrider food, about eating live, and about one of the last pieces of my formula to fall into place. I'm eating live. About 90% of my diet is live, Sunrider, and raw food. And that has definitely played a huge part. And according to all mean, for those of you that have heard the show, certainly has a great deal to do with ascension. So we're going to be talking about that Sunday night. And, of course, next Wednesday we'll be back. So one more time, give your contact information before we say goodnight to you, Monica.
Okay, well, thank you very much. My contact information is, my web address is thesabian@webtv.net. That's T-H-E, small, lowercase, Sabian is capitalized with only one letter, S, capital S, and then A-B-I-A-N. The Sabian at webtv.net. My phone number is area code 303-665-4675. And I wish all of you a wonderful evening, and thank you for listening.
Hey, Monica, thank you so much. You honor us. You're wonderful. Thanks again. We'll talk with you soon.
Looking forward to it.
All right. Good night.
Good night.
And I want to thank all of you for listening to the show. Many blessings. May you be so very blessed in these next days and weeks to come. Please join us again next Wednesday night and Sunday night. And again, for information on the Bioscalar technology, which is healing people by the thousands. And, you know, we're not supposed to use that word healing, but hey, go check out the website. EESystem.com, and we're also brought to you by IAB, freedomforlife.com. It is the alternative insurance policy for the future. And again, we thank Fate Magazine. Go to fatemag.com and tell them that you heard about them from Talk Truth Radio. And thanks again to Ra Ed from Utadi Oils. www.utadi.com for the finest essential oils on the planet. Many blessings. Good night.
The talk radio you have just enjoyed is brought to you by Dr. Sandra Rose Michael and Energy Enhancement Systems. Have a very blessed week, and please join us next Friday at 8 p.m. Pacific Time when we return with more exciting talk. To find out more about the host and sponsor, visit drrainmorgan.com and energyenhancementsystems.com.